Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Fabric Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. It covers Microsoft Fabric, a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 4 with guest Will Thompson. Everyone, welcome along. And our guest today is Will Thompson from Microsoft, who I've seen posting quite a lot in recent times about Data Activator. And so I thought it was time to get him along to talk about it. So welcome, Will.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg. Great to be here.
And so tell us, what have you been doing and why do we want to know about Data Activator?
Yeah, so about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I moved off the Power BI team. So many of your listeners might know me from those years to start a new product. And we'd seen out in the market that there was a real need for doing the insight to action piece, where all those Power BI users, we'd seen people who were saying, hey, look, the report is not the end goal here. The end goal is finding something
to take an
really
action
wrong in my business so that I can actually do something about it.
Yep.
And you know, we hear from people saying, I need a way of monitoring all that data, monitoring all those systems that we're ingesting into Power BI and putting into nice reports and producing nice insights on, but actually acting on it, actually being able to say, ah, something went wrong here, rather than having somebody manually looking at the reports all the time, or even if it was kind of some semi-automated process going into Power Automate or something, we want to just close that and say, hey, can we automatically go and take those actions and improve, optimize the way that they're running their business? And we saw broadly, like there's two big chunk types of data that people were looking at pushing into this kind of system. One was Power BI data, because, hey, people put that stuff into a report and then go look at it. But the other was streaming data. And using near real-time or real-time streams of data where you get very low-level, kind of very granular data that you want to react to and take these actions on. And so we saw that, hey, there's a product that we can build to help here. And so we sometimes call it like a system of detection. It's about detecting patterns in that changing data over time, and then taking some action accordingly. And so we, started to work on this thing and started building these different prototypes for it, and did tons of user research and all that sort of thing. And we've just launched it into public preview last week. Today is the 12th of October. Last week at the Power Platform Conference, we announced it. And it's a good opportunity to come and talk to folks about it.
The aim here, though, is for a low-code experience as well.
That's right. Yeah, very much so. You know, I've said in a few places that we kind of want to do for streaming data, taking actions on streaming data, what Power BI did for analytics on batch data. Mm-hmm. Think about what Power BI started to do, what was it, like 6, 7, 8 years ago, where you could take any Excel spreadsheet, CSV file, whatever it might be, really quickly, without writing any code, load it into an analytics engine, run queries against it, build visual against it, and find interesting things in the data.
Yep.
We want to do the same thing with as simple a set of tools for that streaming data. Give somebody an easy way to connect to that data, write the conditions and the triggers that they're looking to monitor, and then hook it up to some action that they want to take as a result. And as you say, that low-code low-code approach is the way we want to take.
And so what sort of data sources are you supporting? So obviously things to do with Fabric are the main area.
Yeah, so right now in the preview, Power BI is obviously one of them, and event streams. So if you think about like all of the data in Fabric that users are loading into Fabric today, The batch data is predominantly coming in through Data Factory, through Power Query, through those tools that have been around for a little while. And we've got a well-established set of principles and best practices, and you know, there's tons and tons of content out there, like good ways mm-hmm. of doing that. And people understand the modeling that you would do in Power BI and through data warehouses and through DAX and all the other engines that are out there to put the business meaning on top of that. And we're like, well, that's great. Let's not stop people doing that. Use that logic and apply that semantics to the data. We'll just sit on top of that and monitor the results of that. So any Power BI report, somebody can find a visual, you know, whether that's a little line changing over time or just a big KPI tile saying, hey, you know, the number of widgets we sold today is X. Mm-hmm. And just say, I want to monitor that. And some really simple thresholds. Tell me when that goes over a certain amount, or tell me when it, whenever it is over a certain amount. We should talk a bit more about that later. Yeah. And just using Power BI as that mechanism for surfacing all that data makes sense for us to then sit and monitor that on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side for the streaming data hasn't really kind of surfaced in Fabric until the last 6 months or so. Back at Build this year, the other thing that got announced around there, as well as Data Activator, was event streams. Event streams is really the front door, the data factory bit for streaming data.
Mm-hmm.
It's built by the team who built Azure Event Hubs, Event Grid, Streaming Analytics, that messaging world. They are the experts on all types of streaming data and all types of message formats and translations between Avro and MQTT and all of these different formats that I don't claim to be too much of a
connected protocols and the disconnected protocols and actually one question I suppose immediately then is that I suppose two things that I'm wondering about in terms of streaming. One is previously we had streaming data sets in Power BI, and I'm pretty sure I noted somewhere that was now deprecated or something. Is that the case?
If it's not deprecated, I think it probably will be quite soon.
Yeah, okay. So that as an option previously for streaming. Yeah. And the other thing there, of course, is Stream Analytics. Of course, this is its main function in life, and I'm just sort of wondering what's the fit with that.
So the streaming data sets in Power BI, certainly we saw, I never looked after that as a feature in Power BI, but I worked with it quite a lot. We saw a certain number of customers using it, but it never took off.
Yeah.
And I think it was predominantly was because there was, you needed to write code to get the data from there.
Again, it was certainly not low code.
You set the data set up and you say, oh, this field, this field, this field, and it gives you a little schema. But now I've got to go and push data into that schema. So it so often became a developer or a data engineer type task to go and connect to that. And certainly Azure Streaming Analytics was exactly the same. It's an Azure service. It's a developer service. And that team did have some low code kind of GUI way of wiring event streams together and doing some of the transformations and stuff, but it was a developer platform without a at all. And so, you know, where we start to play with those tools, I think the streaming data sets, like we said, they're going to go away sooner or later. Mm-hmm. And I think the event stream is really kind of the Fabric equivalent, like the new Fabric way of doing all of this streaming ingestion. Because you can point it at any event source. You know, it can be just like a Kafka stream with an HTTP URL for it. It can be an event hub with some HTTP endpoint on it. There is also an API, so if you are that kind of engineer, you can push data to it from your applications.
Mm-hmm.
But it then abstracts all of that away and says, okay, we've got an item sitting in a workspace in Fabric, and anybody can use that pretty much like any other data source in Fabric. It's a thing that's managed in the SaaS service. You control permissions to it, you control access to it in the same way as you would do a data warehouse or a data set elsewhere in Fabric. And in fact, we then start to build some of those experiences, improve some of the experiences so that you can take one of the event streams. And there's a one-click button to say, push that into a Data Activator Reflex.
Yeah.
Or push that stream into a Kusto database so that I can go and write some more forensic analysis and stuff on top of it. And those become, they're really kind of where we're majoring on terms of our investment going forwards about how we think about people building these streaming and real-time and eventing type systems in Fabric. It's not just I'm going to load some static data, stick it in a warehouse, and then build a tool on top of it. It's there's a streaming pipeline, for want of a better word, that these event streams kind of are the item that gets surfaced up. But then you can choose, do you want to push it into a Reflex? Do you want to push it into Kusto? Do you want to push it into OneLake? Where do you want to save all that data? What transformations do you want to do on top of it? Event Stream has kind of ASA built into it, effectively. So you can do those transformations. You can do those, the translations between message formats, or maybe some basic grouping and kind of smoothing out data or aggregating stuff if you've got multiple events coming in per second, you want to reduce the rate of that for further processing, whatever. Then you could do that in Event Stream, and the output of that, when you're it's kind of going from that bronze to silver kind of levels of the data, the output of that, then you choose where you want to go put that.
And look, with Stream Analytics, of course, we had I suppose I used to like the way they described it. They said instead of like with a typical database where you're throwing the query at the data, it was more like the query's running all the time and you're throwing the data at the query, rather than the other way around. I suppose several things. One, the first up was various window types and, obviously all, the tumbling, hopping, and so on and so on. Different types of windows that you might apply aggregates. But also importantly, detecting it's not just data, but it's gaps in data. So where something did not occur expecting within a certain period of time, like all the handling of gaps and things and stuff, part of this as well.
Yeah, totally. That's been something that's been really interesting for me, coming from the batch world, effectively, and getting my head into the streaming data space. I mean, I as soon as somebody mentioned windowing functions to me, my mind went back 15 years or however long it was to Stream Insight, the old SQLite warehouse features. And I could remember this little voice coming over from some technical airlift I'd been in when I was at Microsoft in the UK, telling me about these streaming windows and things. And I looked it up and I realized it was the same guy who's actually our architect.
I was going to say these things have been there.
He was in the ASA team, and
Stream Insight was actually an amazing piece of work, right? But again, it was very much a developer play, and the thing I could never understand, and this is the case with many features in the SQL Server family, is that the team would go out and talk to DBAs about it. And they would, and like all the marketing was targeted at people like DBAs, and they would look at it and go, why do I have the slightest interest in this?
Right.
Because one of the things I'm always sort of moaning about is the fact that since about 2012, there's almost no developer outreach happens from the data teams, like particularly SQL and things like that. It's getting better at the moment since Davide is hired and so on. But there's many, many parts of the product that it's the dev leads and those sort of people you have to talk to.
Right.
Not the people at the back end, right? There's a heap of products in that category.
There's a big shift in the audience that we're trying to reach with Data Activator as well. You take your typical BI teams or your typical analysts, even the folks who are closer to the business and kind of understand the business, there is still this kind of after-the-fact approach to analytics where, with the best will in the world, most people's analytic pipelines run overnight, 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It's not about what's happening in the business right now. It's not about how is the business operating right now. And that's a really, really crucial word for us to kind of think. It's about operations. And in the same way that developers are different from DBAs, analytics is different from operations.
Completely. It's just so true. I used to have an old boss years and years ago who used to say to me that accountants make good historians, you know. they'd always tell you after you went wrong why you went wrong. Right. Uh-huh. And he would say it's just completely useless to me, right? So so what he wants to know is as it's happening, he wants to know what do I do?
You know, or even better, hopefully, a little bit in advance of it happening.
Yes. Predictive that would be even better.
The kind of the algebra and everything that we need in these detection functions. But you're saying about like the absence of data. And again, this was something that was really interesting for me coming into this from the batch world, that it's really about the changes in the data from one thing to another that you want to detect. And I mentioned this earlier about how the thresholds of, you know, something simple, like tell me if the power consumption of a particular manufacturing line goes over however many kilowatts.
Yeah.
It's tell me when it goes over that amount. It's not tell me if it is over that amount. Because if you tell me that, I'm probably going to get 40 emails telling me about it or 40 Teams messages or whatever before I get a chance to respond. And it's going to fill up my inbox. What I want is that change from it was below the threshold to it is now above the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start to think, well, that might happen. But if it goes away again 5 seconds later, don't care. Solved itself. Hopefully, my control systems have got something in place to kind of automatically manage that. What I really care about is when that value gets breached 5 times over the course of an hour, or when the value goes above that threshold and stays there for a certain length of time. The demo that I did on at the conference, we were talking about some of the rental bikes in London. You know, you get these called Boris bikes, affectionately known.
Boris bikes.
You take them from one of the docking stations, drive around, drop it off again.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about, you know, that there are scenarios in those kind of, whether it's bikes or the rental scooters that you see in cities, whatever it might be, you could use things like the accelerometers on people's phones to track safety. You know, if that accelerometer is moving around because they're driving around the city and it suddenly stops, you know, has something gone wrong? Have they dropped their phone, my car or something? Who knows what can happen? But it could also just be they've stopped at a traffic light.
Yep.
But if it stops and it doesn't move again for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever threshold you want to set, then that's an indication that something's gone wrong. And so we've already started to build some of those kind of rules into it. And you don't have to work out what's the windowing function that I need to specify from A to B. You just say, tell me if it happens 3 times in 10 minutes. Or tell me if it goes over it 5 times in an hour.
Yeah.
And we do want to build out, you know, we've got these very basic rules in there for now. We want to go and add more of that. And you say about like not hearing anything from a particular sensor. No, there were no events that came back at all. Okay, well, that could mean a whole bunch of different things. It could mean the network's gone down. It could mean the battery died. It could mean there is something wrong. And, you know, like the business side of it is going wrong, and that's why there was no event.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? You set up 3 different triggers for those 3 different situations. You know, you've got to go and alert the network team to make sure that everything's okay. You want to go and find the operator who's closest and tell them to go check the battery. Oh, and the business should understand, you know, the person who we're monitoring here, there's something wrong with them, go and check that they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's often multiple levels for these alerts. And we want to
I notice the latest couple of iPhones have had things like crash detection.
Right.
And actually, things like that, which is interesting.
There's real problems with it as well, where it's unreliable or it doesn't go off when it should do or vice versa.
Yep.
And actually, public safety like that is one of those areas that we're really... hesitant's the wrong word, but like we just want to be really careful about what we promise and the SLAs around it. And you know, there's also some latency in the system, right? Of course there is. There's always going to be something network or whatever, particularly when you're dealing with a cloud service. So we have to be kind of careful about the expectations that we set. And that's something that we really want to hear about from customers in this public preview is we've put in levels, you know, those kind of latencies that we're expecting, and the system's performing to a certain level that we're happy with. Is it enough? Like, are there cases where people desperately need
great question
something because faster or more reliable? And so we want that feedback as well. And it's depending on the situations as well. You know, I've had customers who are saying, like we're looking at airline delays. I need to tell a customer if their flight's been delayed, but the delay changes quite a lot. Oh, actually, no. The better example is gate changes. the gate changes. Mm-hmm. I want to tell my customer. Great, sure. But don't tell them until 10 minutes has gone past, because the likelihood of it changes once is going to change again.
It could change again. Yes, that's right.
So once the gate has changed and it's stayed the same for 10 minutes, then we'll send them the notification. And then you hear the notification has to get through within 30 seconds. Sure, but you're waiting 10 minutes anyway. So how important is that latency? You know, is another minute of latency okay if you were waiting 10 minutes anyway? That's probably acceptable. I get it. There are cases where you need it to be within a couple of seconds. And that's where we want to hear from customers about what do they think they want to use this for? What are they willing to give up for faster latencies? Because you also get things like events being delayed. The network was a bit slow, completely out of our control, or we're monitoring a fleet of trucks and the truck went into a tunnel. Just didn't get any events from it, or through the tunnel, and then suddenly a whole bunch of them come through. How long are we supposed to wait before telling you, oh, we're not getting anything from this truck?
Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com.
What I am wondering about though too is that one of the customers I do a lot of work with at the moment has sawmills all over the country and and outside the country too, actually, but there's a whole lot of stuff you can tell when machines are running, that would start to tell you that, big saw blades on timber, are going out of alignment and so on and so on and so on. There is quite a lot of predictive stuff that you can pick up as things are going. But I'm sort of left wondering, the connectivity from those machines is often tricky stuff. And getting the data from that across into a cloud service, that's a pretty big developer play itself.
And it's one of the things that it's great that we've got the Event Stream and Event Grid folks on board, because they've been handling that for years, and they've got a whole bunch of their messaging technology is built around making sure that things arrive in a timely fashion and in the right order. And if things need to be restated, it's done appropriately. And so we've got that expertise, and we have to figure out the right way of building that into the system and the right level of the right level of controls that we give users to be able to say, I'm willing to wait this long. After that point, if the data arrives and it's late, just ignore it, because
the sort of thing I'm wondering about is if you look at like Azure Machine Learning, for example. There's a whole lot of things that pushing it up to the cloud service just takes too long to make calls on things. And they have many of their services with the ability to deploy them out to a container and push them to the edge so that they run, and they just need to be periodically connected in that sort of case. And, I'm just sort of left wondering if there isn't
potential
a requirement for something like that.
There's definitely a thing that we could think about. I mean, at the moment, Fabric is a cloud service. It's not going to suddenly appear on the edge. But the two things can kind of work hand in hand. I think there's that kind of operational, the really tight control loop where it's running at the edge because, you're monitoring RPMs or some vibration in the blades, and it's got to stop when that vibration hits a certain thing. But there's also then that's fine for one machine. But what if I've got sawmills all around the country, like you said, and I want to start aggregating the data from all of those to say, okay, let's monitor all of that real-time data and see, is there a pattern where over a period of time, saw blades that were manufactured from a particular manufacturer or that were manufactured on a particular date, those seem to be going wrong more often.
Yeah.
And, we see... maybe 10 of these different saw blades went wrong over a period of time. We had to stop the production line. Something happened. Okay, let's fire a notification to somebody to say, hey, do you want to go and check in with that manufacturer and see Is there something we need to do to replace these? There's some proactive maintenance that we want to do. And it could be, you know, directly reaching into that kind of maintenance system to say, hey, log a ticket, get an engineer out to go look at it. And that aggregation is something that the cloud is perfect for, right? You can more periodically upload all the data off those edge devices, put it somewhere centrally so that you can start to, you know, the real-time nature of it stretches out, but the reaction to it is still happening in real time. That's the thing about
that's why I'm sort of wondering, though, in many of those cases, I don't know that I'd want the whole stream of data going to the cloud. What I would want is the detected things that I'm interested in going to the cloud, not all the data. But the thing is, that would require something where in the cloud I could configure what I'm interested in, but that would be pushed down to something sitting beside the machine.
I mean, the other thing is
to actually work that out.
The other thing is to think about, you know, stream the raw data up. Push that to the cloud and let that ingestion layer of event stream and even data activator, you know, the first step in data activator, selecting the right events that you care about, filtering out the noise, or aggregating it into 1 hour intervals instead of every single event. At that point, the raw data can just be dropped. You know, from that point on, you care about the events that you're monitoring. And actually, one of the things that we're trying to really think about is the kind of reuse of the output stream. Once I've got this stream, which is the detections, that the events, that you, the conditions that I'm detecting actually happened on a slower cadence, that stuff is important to kind of feed back into the system to build those higher order events of, okay, we've got this lowest level of individual RPM values or whatever it might be. We've got this higher order thing of the number of times an issue was detected on a particular sawmill. And then there's a third level on top of it where it's across all of the sawmills, there's a particular set of attributes that we've identified that caused problems. You know, you get these layers.
That's getting more to the analytic phase rather than the operational phase. Once you're doing that.
And I think that the further you get away from that raw data, the less latency is important, right? You know, you can get more into an analytic space, but you're still looking at a stream of data and you're looking for those changes in condition, changes in state. You know, this thing was in a good state, it's not anymore.
So, apart from streams of data, the other one, of course, was things that aren't streams. So I suppose we've still got, with Data Activator, a fairly clean way to determine that an action should occur if some number in a report or whatever you're saying, like in Power BI or something, changes. What sort of actions can we take
The other side. Today, we can send Teams messages. You can send emails. Yep. Those are the kind of most common. Most customers, when we start off these kind of conversations, they say, "Hey, what I want to know is when this happens, send me an email, or just notify the person who's relevant, who's important to understand it."
And can you say, "Don't send more than one in 10 minutes
That spam detection and kind of spam prevention is really important to us. At the moment, we don't have much of that kind of built in. You kind of have to build it into your conditions.
Yeah, because that's critical. Yeah.
I totally understand because, you know, one of the guys on my team, during testing, like in the summer, set up a trigger, went away for a week, came back to 37,000 emails in his inbox. You know, it's like, these things can obviously.
Even the old SQL Server agent thing that said, don't send it more than, you know, every 5 minutes or something.
So there's a whole bunch of different things that we're going to start implementing for that. Kind of these digests where you can say, only send me this once every 24 hours and give me a list of all the times that it went wrong. Or once you've sent one, don't send any more for 10 minutes or for an hour or however long you want. The ideal for this, actually, I think there's some really interesting ideas. If you look at what the Power BI team are doing around embedding live visuals into emails using these loop components. They talked about that at the Power Platform conference as well. I love the idea of having a live loop component. So you send an email, you only get one email, but the loop component updates automatically. So the next time you open an email, it'll say, oh, yeah, it's happened again. You know, since the last time you know, you just get this like this ever growing list of the times that it's fired, but only ever one email. I thought that's a really nice way of doing that. So, you know, there's some interesting ideas that we can leverage some fun. But ultimately,
apart from
getting
sending an email, though.
Yeah, so email's obviously one of them.
So we've got
Teams messages is the other. And for us as well, the important thing is getting it to the right person. So, you know,
I noticed in the list there were things like, you know, running, say, Power Automate or Actions or things like that. The thing that, or they were saying even you could run something in a line of business app, is that just like you can make an HTTP call to something? Or,
So for now,
I'm sort of wondering the mechanism by which that would happen.
The mechanism for now is through Power Automate. So Power Automate, there are hundreds of connectors that they've got to reach out to those other systems. You can call a Power Automate flow from Data Activator, pass in parameters based on the event, and then you wire up your flow to pass that through to the operational system. Mm-hmm. We're working on building kind of custom connectors that do exactly just call an HTTP endpoint, you know, make that sort of request. The other one that we hear a lot is Azure Functions. There's a lot of customers out there who use that as the escape valve to whatever.
Azure Functions are a wonderful thing. It's one of my favorite things, actually. But the concern I have with that is that if the activator is calling those sort of things, what identity does it use to call those? And that's where I get interested. So like the data activator, does it have a system managed identity?
So
assign user assign managed identities?
We need to do more on that front as well. So at the moment, it's calling it as data activator. You look at the Power Automate connector. Actually, I forget the Power Automate connector, whether we're doing it as the person who created the connection.
And this is what worries me, right, is that far too many of these things, I still find it's like it's a whole Power BI whole area thing, is that there's still a sort of an individual user mindset to me, far too much compared to sometimes I need to be thinking system stuff instead, right? And that's there's a real disconnect there. Yeah. And I go into far too many sites where they run, say, logic apps or these things. And the problem is they're all set up as some individual person.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, for a business, that's just poison, doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time coming in the Power BI world as well to be able to run data set refreshes and run pipelines.
A classic example, like at the moment we do refreshes out of, say, Azure SQL databases.
Yep.
Even into Azure Analysis Services, for example, and we have to use SQL authentication.
Yeah,
we're back to that, you know, which they also don't use this anymore. But we've got no way of doing that because even though in something like Azure Analysis Services, I can set it's got a system managed identity. I could have put user assigned managed identities, but I've got no way when it makes a connection. To say use your identity rather than something else, you know, and it's the same in Power BI Premium. It's the same sort of thing. Those sort of refreshes.
I don't know why that's messy. The Fabric team are building stuff into the platform to allow managed identities so that you can go run in any of those background tasks, be it data set refreshes and we will start to make use of that as well to say, hey, run this data activator trigger, effectively run it as that managed identity so that when an action has to occur, you know the account that's being used for it. We'll get there.
Yeah, ideally you also want it to be a user assigned one. Just for anybody listening, the thing with a user assigned one is it's created as a separate object and then you can attach it to different things, you know. And so if I had a data activator or a Power BI, whatever the thing is, if it had a user assigned identity, then at least that can live on if I had to create a second one or if I had to drop and recreate one or things like that. Whereas it's not tied to that one
fabricator. Yes. we have a similar kind of abstraction for the Power Automate actions. So rather than having to create a Power Automate action every time for every trigger, you can just create one of these, they're called a custom action. And then that custom action can be reused across multiple triggers. So you have multiple things that fire a, I don't know, like a logger maintenance request flow or yep. some kind of approval flow. Like you have one flow, but you can call it from multiple triggers. It's the same mm-hmm. sort of principle. Like you have one identity that you can call from, that you can use for multiple places. So you don't have to keep creating tons and tons and tons of them.
Yep, yep, yep. And so I think, yeah, that was about the only other concern I really had anything that fires off actions. I'm always thinking, who does that action run as?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we hear that. The other thing around kind of identities that we hear a lot is permissions to the triggers. So at the moment, you think back to the early days of Power BI, we're the same way. If you've got access to the reflex item, you can manage everything.
Yep.
You can see all the data that goes into it, and you can go and change mm-hmm. everything. But we've heard from a number of customers where, you know, they want one trigger, but that it needs to be sliced up by region or by store. And so only the store manager, a particular store manager, can only see the data for their store. They can only see the times the trigger fired in their store. Down to even sometimes we hear like there's customization that you might want to do of those triggers. So the thresholds might be slightly different depending on, you know, if you're a retail store in the middle of New York versus rural Queensland somewhere, right, you're going to have very different considerations of what is a good sales day or a bad sales day.
Yes.
So you want to be able to customize that. And also the other thing is that the person who's customizing that is usually the store manager, who's responsible for setting those targets. It's not somebody central. Mm. It's going to be the person who...
Oh, look, a simple example for that is things like public holidays that are, of course, different in different spots.
Yeah.
And some days may be days that, you know, not all stores are open on the same days.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, we've got to provide that level of... it's not quite permissions, but it's user identities, customization per user identity or per group or whatever. And, you know, we're a small team. We're not a big team as a new product. We are growing, but that means that we've got a lot of stuff like that on our backlog. We know we're going to have to go and address sooner or later, and then we'll get to it as soon as we can.
That pretty much is bringing us up to time then, Will. Mm-hmm. Are people going to see you anywhere and upcoming
things? Yeah, there's loads of places that you'll see the Data Activator team and me popping up across user groups and webinars and the like. But the big thing really is our Data and AI conference, which is going to be in Vegas in March next year. So it's the 26th to the 28th of March. The whole of the Fabric team are going to be there, along with a bunch of folks from the AI world as well. And you'll see there's workshops before and after, and we'll have a load of technical content and sessions. We'll be talking about what's coming up. In the
fabulous
for it as well.
Well, thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg. It's been a pleasure to come along.
Awesome.
See ya.